Speak Sport, the podcast for women fluent in sport. If you've been around female sports for a long time, especially cricket, then I do not need to introduce Mignon Dupree to you because you will know who she is. But if you're someone who's just coming into, you know, cricket and going, what's this all about? You know, what's women's cricket all about? Well, then my guest today here on She Speaks Sport is Mignon, and she's an iconic female sportswoman, and she's really pioneered the route to professionalism for female cricketers in South Africa. And she's represented South Africa more than 260 times, which is incredible. She's a proud ICC tournament ambassador for the World Cup 2023 and participant in the Fairbreak Global Tournament, which is amazing. We'll touch on that as well. And that has brought female cricketers together from 35 different countries. She's the first female cricketer included in the South African Hall of Fame, which is amazing. And also to have SuperSport Park Stadium gates named in your honor, Mignon. That's amazing as well. The most capped South African women's cricketer, was part of Team South Africa in the Commonwealth Games. She captained the South African women's cricket team in 97 consecutive matches from 2011 to 2016, played in six women's big league, bash leagues, wow, played for Southern Vipers, played in the 100 for Manchester Originals and Trent Rockets, love the 100 currently at the moment, and scored a test 100 in her maiden test, which is incredible. That's just a few things that you've done, Mignon. How are you today? It's so good to have you with me.
Hi, Lauren. Thank you very much for having me. And thank you for that introduction. I forgot about some of those milestones, but awesome to be reminded about a very special career. So thank you for that.
Yeah, totally. An incredible special career. Have you been enjoying watching the hundreds? Have you been watching at the moment and just seeing how everything's been going? I want to thank the 100 for helping me get through life at the moment, because in this cold winter, it's warming my heart.
You know, it's been awesome. The 100 competition is a fabulous competition to be part of. And just especially, I think what they're getting right is kind of to put the female and the male cricketers on exactly the same stage and playing at the big stadiums. And it's awesome to see how many people are actually coming out to watch women's cricket. And I remember last year we actually played the opening, or the women's match was the opening match of the 100. It was not a men's match. So I think that they're doing a fantastic job to invest in women's cricket. And it's been really good. And also a lot of our South African counterparts, friends, are currently playing and doing really well. So unfortunately, sometimes the timeline, it's like it's just at late afternoon, but yeah. You still have a couple of things to do. So I usually catch the back end of the game. And then at night when we are actually having dinner, then it's the men's cricket on. And I'm like, oh, I want to see the girls play. Yeah. But it's been fantastic.
It has been. And I love that you mentioned that as well, because sometimes you're kind of in the middle of things and I'm like rushing and I'm like watching and then I'm like rushing and I want to watch the women's game. And I heard that they said that there was like already there's been like 300,000 people coming that has already come through to watch the women's cricket games in the 100. I mean, that's a huge number. It's amazing what you also said, what they're doing for women's cricket. I love, love, love this. It's incredible. It's big numbers.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's like I said, I think that's the one thing that they definitely got right to put the male and female cricketers on exactly the same platform and stage. And they are putting on a performance.
And like you said, our South African counterparts, friends and people that we love so much are really doing well at the hundreds this year. It's amazing. And then obviously there's always that pride. And I think when you see, you know, you see Kapi or you see Ismail busy boiling, you kind of get a lump in your throat because it's very emotional. It's like, yes, those are our girls, you know, and it's actually very, very special for us watching. And I'm so glad that we get to watch it as well.
Yeah, it's very nice when they're doing well. And I'm not part of the tournament. Usually they're doing well against me. So it's a quite different. Now I can root for them when they're not playing against me. But and somebody that's really impressed me is Nadine de Klerk, how she stepped up.
Yes.
She got a late call-up. Unfortunately, Danae got injured. And in, I think, the first game, she won the Match Hero Award. So that was pretty special, I think, for her to also stamp her authority in the first game she played in the 100.
Yeah, she's been doing incredibly well. And it's just It's amazing. I'm just so proud. I like just as a spectator on the other side, you're just watching, going, "Wow, I am so proud!" And look at what we are achieving, globally as well for women's cricket, and also in South Africa. And Mignon, one of the things that people always ask when we go, "Okay, what's Mignon been up to? What is she doing since her retirement?" Which wasn't so long ago. And that's only retirement from international cricket, from playing for South Africa. And I think people get that confused. They think, "Oh, you've retired from cricket altogether." You have not retired from cricket altogether. What have you been getting up to since the half retirement? I'm going to say it's a
I
half retirement.
don't actually know what you call it, but yeah, no, life has been really good. I got to spend a lot more time at home and with family, which was one of the most important reasons to step away. I think the last couple of years has been really busy and on the road. So myself and Tony, my husband, have relocated to Cape Town. So we've moved in Feb
Yay.
just in time for the World Cup. Then I managed to work during the World Cup on the commentary team. I then had an opportunity to play in FairBrick in Hong Kong earlier this year. And then I'm currently preparing. I'm leaving over the weekend for the CPL, the Caribbean Premier League. So I'll be playing for Trinidad Knight Riders this time around. And then the Big Bash is just around a corner again. So it's actually been a busy year. It's not like I haven't been doing a lot. There's a it's slightly different because it's all on my own time and I don't have to log my exercise to a trainer anymore. Yeah, so it's been interesting. Just like I said, the half retirement you're so used to in the professional year, like you've got a certain program you have to follow. We have to log our sessions every day. And sometimes when you forget your watch, you go, "Oh, are they going to believe that I actually went to the gym?" And now I go and I forget my watch and I say, "Yeah, but I don't have to log it to anyone. It's just for me, so no need." So that's been nice to actually know what I'm doing at the moment. It's just for myself, and fortunately, I have always had, I would think, or like to say, good work ethic. So I'm okay to still get myself up and going on my own. This first few weeks, when I got back and I kind of just enjoyed holiday, it was a challenge getting back into training and being stiff all the time, but I think I got into a good routine again.
And you do have a good work ethic, because a few times when I've spoken to you, you've been like, "I'm just at the gym. I'm going to do this quickly, like later on." So you've got that work ethic down. But it's nice to do things for yourself, isn't it? Because it's a different experience altogether when it's like yourself and you're motivating yourself, and it's also something that you want to do. It's coming from within you. It doesn't feel like, "Oh, I have to," kind of thing. I'm sure that that's a good feeling.
Yeah, definitely. I think it helps sometimes when, especially when it comes to fitness, when you have friends around you and you're doing it in a group, just to have some moral support. It's not always that easy when you have to torture yourself in the gym or go out running. And to that side, it's more fun when you're part of a team and have to do fitness. But yeah, it's also nice that at least now I can do it on my own time zone whenever I want to. I want to lie in a little bit later today and only go for training in the afternoon. I can do that. So it's all up to me. So I enjoy
That's
that
so
part of it.
cool. So that's what you've been doing. So the next time that people ask, that is what Mignon is doing. And she's doing a lot. So you might catch her in the gym. You might catch her in the gym a day or 1 p.m. You never know. You were in the commentary at the T20 Women's World Cup this year, and you were part of this whole experience, which was incredible. I mean, we're going to be talking about this T20 Women's World Cup for a very long time. And especially obviously because we made the final and there was that hype and it was here on our home ground. And although it was in a different way, you were this ambassador for the World Cup. We saw you with the trophy. It was really cool, part of the trophy tour. And how was the World Cup experience for you? Because does it feel like a bittersweet? Because you're standing there and you're part of it, but in a different way. Or was it just a sense of, "This is where I need to be"? And you had that excitement as well, because the excitement, the support, it was also tangible. It was also real. People coming to the stadiums as well, especially in Newlands, which I got to do a lot. How was the experience for you?
Yeah, I would say it's a bit of mixed emotions, like you mentioned. I actually got lucky enough to got my hands on the trophy, which you could only hold the
Yes.
trophy if you've won it. So none of our girls have done that yet. So I got, at least got that opportunity before the World Cup. I would have loved for them to have that opportunity during the World Cup. But yeah, it was a bit bittersweet. There was a moment where you thought, "Oh, you know, should I have stayed a little bit longer? But I think at the back end, it was I enjoyed the different role. And I think the nice thing was being in the commentary team, you were still part of a team. And I managed to see the goals. And I was allowed to go out on the park and have conversations with them. So I almost felt part of the team, but without the stress of playing in a World Cup, which was nice. So it was just amazing to see them do well and to see Siya Kolisi come out and support the girls. And like you mentioned, it was amazing. I've played at Newlands before, and it's usually only a couple of family and friends in the stands. You can count them on one or two hands. So to see a sold-out stadium, it really showed how far women's cricket has come in South Africa. And that was really special. And like I said, I think they're the first senior team to have played in a World Cup final. So they've definitely all become history makers. So on that side, I thought, it would have been nice to be part of it. Mm. But I was really proud, and it was amazing to be there. And in the semi or the final, they still wanted me to commentate. And I then said to them, you know what, this is a moment in history. I don't want to miss out on it. I actually want to enjoy it. In the comms box, you have to stay. You can't be rooting for South Africa. And I said, you know what, I want to be rooting for South Africa today. So I then opted not to commentate in the final and just enjoy it with my family, with Tony, and my parents also went with me. So that was really special, and we got to support the girls.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, when you're in the commentary or any kind of situation like that, you've really got to be, like you said, kind of neutral. You can't be like, yes, she got out. And, you know, your fellow commentators from Australia, and you're like, okay, I'm just going to keep quiet. Yeah, so that's amazing that you were part of that. And I'm sure so many emotions as well. And speaking of that, you captained our team from 2011 to 2016, which is incredible. And every captain has a unique approach. When I talk to coaches or captains of teams, whether it be netball, basketball, cricket, soccer, everyone has a unique approach to captaincy and coaching as well. But there's different things. How did you feel like you needed to motivate the team when there were moments that were a bit tough, when there were losses? What did you feel your unique approach was to captaining our team that was very unique to your personality and your kind of style of being? Because, of course, I have heard cricket players say to me that, you know, captaining a team is very personal, and it's often not something that can be taught. It's often something that someone is born with, and it's something that you learn. That's very interesting. I've always found that interesting. What was your unique approach to captaining the team and getting them through those hard times? Because there's not always good moments. You're not always winning, you know?
Yeah, look, I think I became captain of South Africa really young. So I still felt like I was at that stage probably inadequate. I didn't feel like at that time that I knew it all. I think it was before the professional era. So from a tactical point of view, I felt like I didn't really know that much. So there was times when I still had to go onto the field and make a few crypt notes of who need to bowl and bat and field where.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing that probably is my personality. I think I really care about people. And I think that was the biggest thing. I always had an open door policy. And I felt like if I could understand the players and understand how you can get the best out of every individual, that's the most important thing. If we could get everybody to have a common goal and play for one purpose, like we all come from different backgrounds. I think that the important thing is to understand what drives every individual and why they play for South Africa, and that would be their driver to want to do well. And sometimes just remind them of the reason why they started playing. And we all, as a little girl, you fell in love with the sport. And I think that was the most important thing, is just to remind the girls of the reason why they started playing. We play for the love of the game. And that if you do your best, that's all you can ask for. It's not, unfortunately, it is ruthless, and cricket at times can be really, really tough on you. But I think all we can ask for is for everybody to just do their 100%. And I think the most important thing is probably those hours, the unseen hours, where people don't really see when you graft and have to go through the hard yards and the fitness and the gym sessions. So I think at that time, like I mentioned, I was the captain before we became professional. And at that time, women's cricket was probably still seen as a real male-dominant sport. So I think a big thing for me was to try and change perception, to try and show that you can be a girly girl and compete. So I think that was my captaincy style, was to show to the world that you could be a girly girl and be competitive. And And I think that was, for me, important, and just like, yeah, understanding every individual and the players and trying to get the best out of them.
Oh, I love that you shared that. Thank you so much. And I love the fact that you were saying about being a girly girl, because sometimes in sport, we think you have to be a certain way. You know, you have to look a certain way or act a certain way or dress a certain way. There's all these stereotypes that people have. And, you know, just listening to you as well, very much sounds like you're the kind of person that, like you said, cares about other people, but also their purpose and why they feel they do things in life. And is that kind of a lesson? And that very much is very unique to you. Is that kind of a lesson that you've taken from the field into your everyday life? Do you feel that there have been lessons you've learned as a cricket player that you've taken into life? Or do you feel it's vice versa? Life taught you things that you took onto the field?
Yeah, I think it's a bit of both again. Yeah, I think probably if I have to think of one lesson, it would probably be to use your stumbling blocks as stepping stones. I think in cricket, more often than not, there's more failures than successes. And the thing, you can't go sulking. You have to find a way to just be better. So use that stumbling block as an opportunity to learn and just be better the next time. And I think in life, there's oftentimes things comes across your path and you might not really understand why it's happening. It might feel like it's a stumbling block. But if you can start piling up these blocks and blocks, eventually it becomes a staircase. And, you know, it will help you to reach your ultimate goal, your potential. So I think that was probably one of the lessons that I learned throughout my career.
Oh, I love that as well, because in life, you're not always going to win. Life is not like a cricket game, obviously, or an ODI or a test match, because it's always this one winner, one loser, so to say, one second place person. You're not always going to win, but how do you overcome that? And in life, we have these similar experiences, don't we, where things don't always work out the way that you think that they will. Sometimes we encounter failures, or we encounter delays, or we want to do something and it doesn't quite work out, or you want to start a family and it's delayed and it's not for anything that you're doing. And then we've got to, like you said, to take those blocks and build them up. There is something that we can get out of that. And I think that's a powerful life lesson that we can take with us. And do you ever feel nostalgic when you watch those international games? We're going to be playing Pakistan soon and New Zealand. Are you going to be flicking on and watching what we're doing? Do you ever feel like, what is your, obviously you still feel so connected to the team, I'm sure. And, you know, like friends of yours and people that you played with. Do you ever feel like an emotional connection to what's happening on the field when you're watching those international games?
Definitely. I think it's been part of my life for the last 16 years. So it's definitely a big part of my life. So I obviously still want them to do well, and there's obviously I'm hurting with them when it's not going well, because unfortunately people, the winning part is the easy part and everybody then cares, but it's when you're not doing well or not performing and it's hard, because nobody wants to do bad for their team. You want to contribute, but there is unfortunately times that you don't perform like you want to, and I think that's the hardest part, is to then keep your head high and find a way to still be a team player. And it's not always easy. There's times when I'm also glad when I see the pressures on, I just go, oh, you know what, I'm so glad I'm not part of that, because that was the big thing about people. They you speak about winning the World Cup a lot of times, but not a lot of people speak about what happens when you don't. And I think especially the last World Cup, when we went to Australia, and with the idea that I think it was the best, probably at that time, the best team we've had, our best chance to win a World Cup, and falling short, I think that hurts a lot. And it stays with you for a long time, I think. And especially if we look back to 2017, when we lost with a couple of runs to spare, and it stays with you for a couple of months, and up to this day, it still hurts when you see some of the footage. So you're never prepared for that. That's unfortunately kind of the one without the other. Yes, you might be able to play in a World Cup final, but you can also have the heartbreak. And I think at the time where I just thought I couldn't go through another heartbreak experience. So I'm really glad that the girls did one better and got to the final. So they already made us proud, although they didn't win the tournament. But it's unfortunately, we didn't know that it's going to go that way before the tournament started.
Yeah, that's amazing as well. Like, just thinking of of the heartbreaks that you have to endure. And, you know, you just saw so many teams, especially during that Cricket World Cup, like New Zealand, just, I really think that they anticipated going a lot further. And just, you could see the heartbreak that so many of the players carry. It's a big moment. It's a big reality. And I'm sure a little, yeah, like you said, a little bit of relief that it's not another heartbreak, just not another one. We're going to, speaking of break, we're going to take a really, really quick break, but don't go anywhere because Minion and I are still going to be chatting after this. So Minion, this is what one of the questions I would love to ask you. I mean, you're still young. Of course, you're half retired now from the game. But if you had to think about your legacy, which is still being written, it's still your life is still being written. There's so much that you're going to be doing. What do you want to be remembered for? If people look back on, even if they knew you as a cricket player, even if they know you as a human being, what is it do you think that you at your heart want to be remembered for, and the legacy that you would want to leave behind? Of course, you've done so many incredible things in the cricket world, but I'm sure there's so much inside of you as well that goes, there's more that I want to be remembered for as well.
Yeah, I think for me, I probably want people to remember me more for Minion, the person that I was and how I made them feel, than Minion, the cricketer. I think I would want people to walk away, and when they had an interaction with me, they needed to feel good about it. It needs to, and like, I want to be able to use my God-given talent and to glorify God's name. And I think that I managed to do that during my cricket career. So that was really special. But I think the bigger thing for me would be, I want people to remember me for the person, my bubbly personality, and when you had an interaction with me, I would hope that it made them feel good.
So that's beautiful. And speaking of, you're chatting there about faith as well, and, you know, glorifying God, using your talents. Faith has always been, it's not part of your story, it is your story. Faith is at the center of what you do. And you recently shared your faith journey in a new book called God in Sport, which is incredible. Tell us a bit about, you know, how was it sharing your testimony in this book and them saying to you, hey, you know, come, we're going to create this book of all these incredible South African sports people. We want you to be a part of it. How was it sharing your testimony? And like I said, faith has always been part of your journey, always been part of your story. You've always shared that and people know that about you. Was it something different actually sharing it in a book like this?
Yeah, I feel really blessed that I got the opportunity to share it. And I think it's because a lot of these athletes got very vulnerable in the book and shared the sides of the sport that people don't always know about, the hard parts and the things that you see the athlete, but there's lots of moments where all of them go through heartache and pain and through failures and how you need to build yourself back up. But I think the good thing, like you mentioned, for me, a motto has always been, my talent is God's gift to me, and what I do with it is my gift back. And I think, like I mentioned, for me to play cricket, it has always been an opportunity to praise and worship. I saw that as a method of worship, using my skill to just go out there and play. So to share a little bit of my story is special. And hopefully the book is actually, God in Sport is the company that's selling the book, but the book is actually called Listen, God's Voice in My Life. So it's a lot of different athletes that just share the encounter that somewhere along the line, the encounter with God. And also there's a lot of that we touched on during the COVID times and how that changed life for a lot of people. So definitely go get that book. It's on Take a Lot, it's on Amazon. I think people should definitely try and go and follow God in Sport. They share a lot of these stories and snippets and the behind the scene interview snippets. And what makes this book cool is also a QR code. So you actually scan a QR code. So it's not just the book. There's photos in it, but then you get to scan a QR code and actually it takes you to an interview with the athlete and seeing a bit of a different side and where they actually have a conversation and share their story.
That is really, really cool. And I do also want to encourage people to go on over and get that book. It is incredible. And, you know, I think one of the things that we realize, and sometimes some people don't realize, is the huge power and testimony that sports people actually give to us when they share their faith or when they just display that faith. We saw it now with the Netball World Cup, like our SPA Proteas. I mean, they always get together after the game and kneel down and pray. Now, there's a lot of people that if you're not a person of faith, you probably wouldn't even realize what's actually happening there. But it's such a testimony that their lives are all committed to one thing, and that recognition that God is at the center. And it made such a huge impact on me being part of the crowd and a lot of other people sitting in the crowd. So, you know, sports people carry a unique ability to be able to share their faith in many, many different ways. It's not often always just speaking about their faith, but it's what you do on the court or the field or in the game that speaks to people. And I think it's so beautiful. And I'm so grateful you shared your testimony in this book. I'm looking forward to getting the book myself. Have not got a copy yet, but hopefully will soon. And Mignon, the last thing I wanted to ask you as we're wrapping up is that you are involved with Fair Break. And I mentioned that at the beginning. And for those who have been listening to She Speaks Sport, we have spent some time with Sean Martin, the founder of Fair Break. We've chatted with Roberta Moretta Avery. I love her.
She's awesome.
She's amazing. And you know, we've chatted about the sport, and you've also seen the women's game evolve so much through the years. You've been part of the evolution of women's cricket. And how do you feel about the recent developments in women's cricket? Is it exciting? It's encouraging. We know now that CSA has announced this equal pay for male and female cricket players in South Africa, which everyone's celebrating. And that's cool. And with something like Fair Break as well, it's all about a movement and creating opportunities. And it just seems there's a lot of good developments happening around the game that we can be optimistic about. How are you feeling about it?
Definitely. There's a lot of stuff happening, a lot of excitement. Also, provincial cricket in South Africa has been professionalized. So this, the girls are going to get contracts. So it's now a viable career option in South Africa. And like you mentioned, Fairbreak has been awesome. They've been giving girls that would necessarily have an opportunity to showcase their talent a platform. Girls from countries, we had 36 different countries presented at the last Fairbreak tournament. So that's really special. And yeah, I think it's amazing. The women's game is just growing from strength to strength, and the money that's being invested into the women's game, it's exciting. There's a moment there when I also thought, oh, I just wish I was a couple of years younger and I could continue playing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think also with that being said, there will be lots of other opportunities outside of playing, whether it will be coaching and groundsman and umpiring and being in the commentary box or a mentor and a consultant. So I think the way the women's game is professionalizing around the globe, there will be lots of different opportunities and avenues for girls and women to get involved in cricket.
Amen. I love that. I love that. They say the 90% of C-suite individuals that are women in the sporting world are actually ex-players. So there you go. There's so much space. Mignon, as we're wrapping up, I want to say thank you so much for being with me today. It's been such a pleasure. Thank you for touching my life during this interview with your bubbly, enthusiastic personality, as you said. So you've already achieved part of your goal and purpose in this earth. So thank you so much for being here today. It's been such a joy to be with you.
Thank you, Lauren. Thank you for having me. And thank you for taking the time to share my story. And I really appreciate it. And have a blessed day.
You too.
You've been listening to the She Speaks Sport podcast. Find us on your favorite podcast app like Apple, Google, Castbox, and Spotify. Subscribe and like to stay updated on all new episodes. Thanks for listening.